Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Marcus Morris appeared to step on Luka Doncic's already injured ankle on purpose. My man Acho, one of the first people to call Morris out on Twitter. Well, Morris responded to Acho tweeting this smoke. You don't know me, fam. To even think I would go that far to hurt a player is out of pocket.
Out of pocket.
I play this game because I love it.
10 years.
10 years and been going against the best since day one. Stop all that BS, champ. He wasn't talking to you. So Acho, you.
Damn.
What was your biggest takeaway from my Clippers blowing them out last
night? Man, what do they say? They say make sure your praise is as loud as your hate.
Okay.
So Paul George.
Boom, boom. Paul,
my biggest takeaway was this. Doc Rivers was in his bag. Let's talk about the first play of the game. First offensive possession for the Clippers. They feed Paul George. Paul George, he's going to get a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
What did Doc say? I want to make sure Paul George is in his bag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now he didn't just give that up. First play of the second half, again, screen to Paul George. Paul George to the back, an easy bucket. So my biggest takeaway, Doc Rivers, he was in his bag doing what he needed to do to feed Paul George. And Paul George, 35 points in under 25 minutes, first player in the shot clock era to accomplish that. So, Marcellus, if I'm going to critique the man, I also have to be intelligent enough to give praise where praise is due. So, PG, you did your thing. It was good to see Playoff P back. But let me get to the real takeaway.
Right now?
Let me get to the real.
Oh, really? Because I want to say all that was just fluff, trying to keep your job.
That wasn't fluff.
Trying to keep your job.
I give
you want credibility?
Let me get to the real takeaway.
Yeah, go into the notes for real.
Yo, Clippers, sir, they're starting to look a little suspect. They're starting to look a little bit, dare I say, dirty. Now, Marcus Morris, I respect you tweeting at me because I always like, hey, a player, give me your opinion before I go offer my own. Give me your take.
But you offered yours before you gave me yours.
Nah, I didn't. I said coincidence. Y'all tell me.
Oh, boy, stop.
Y'all tell me. That's what I said.
That's what I said.
Don't try to throw rocks in my hands.
Look. Boy, stop.
I don't know. Like you said, Marcellus tweeted at me, ladies and gentlemen, and Marcellus said, you can tell intention by a tweet or by a video.
By a video?
I can't. I couldn't tell intention.
Okay, good,
but here's
good.
What I know, Marcellus. An NBA basketball court is 4,700 square feet.
That's a nice house.
That's 4,700.
Right
it
now.
Is. 4,700 square feet. Marcellus, the odds that 2 feet wind up in the same place at the same time, 1 in 22 million. The odds that Marcus Morris' foot winds up on Luka's foot is 1 in 22 million.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Marcus Morris, I don't know your intention, and I'm not going to sit here and say that you did it intentionally. But what I'm going to say is, in 22 million times, it would take one time for that to happen, and it so happened that was the one time on the one ankle that we all knew was hurt. So, Marcellus, you do the math, sir. You went to Columbia.
Trying.
You a smart man. You tell me, but those were my biggest takeaways.
Okay. Well, damn, 1 in 22 million. Man, and you're looking at guys that of 7 billion people in the world, there's only 450 of them in this world. So it looks like your odds of 1 in 22 million and the odds of him being in the NBA sound kind of the same, if not worse, in terms of stepping on someone's foot. But I'm not even going to go down that road first.
Don't.
First thing I'm going to do
is
say,
road.
Somebody shot 63% last night. That squad.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to get it done. Thank you, Doc Rivers, for being a coach, a champion coach. Well, there are only 6 active coaches that have actual championships. When you're a champion coach, you look at your players and you say, you know what, I'm not going to ride the wave with y'all. I'm going to leave that to people on Twitter like Acho. I'm going to leave that to fans out there that are going to go high and then going to go low. I'm going to keep it even keel. Paul George, we invested in you. Paul George, we believe in you. Paul George, like you showed, first play is for you.
Mm-hmm.
Paul George, this game is for you. You go out there and show them what you got because we already know. Another thing that showed me that this Clipper squad has a higher ceiling than any other team existing, and when they're fully activated, fully motivated, it's going to be a problem, is the fact that the Lakers in their series took a punch. First game, bow! Portland came out and said, we ain't just a playing team. And then the Lakers said, okay, I'll meet you at the school flag and we're going to whoop that in. Okay, the Clippers are a little different. They said, Kimbo Slice style, rest in peace, hit me, bow! Hit me again, bow!
while.
Now here comes the pain. And that's what the Clippers are doing. Completely different mindsets and completely different levels in terms of game, in terms of confidence. So when the Clippers play like that, fully motivated, bro, sorry, it's going to be easy.
See, I understand where you're going, Marcellus, but when it's talking about takeaways, I didn't really take that away from the game. Oh. You see, what I took away from the game was, okay, Doc Rivers, thank you for out-coaching Rick Carlisle. Took you long enough.
Finally.
Finally. Right? That's honestly, that was my first takeaway. But then my other takeaway was, man, it's really hard to root for the Clippers. Like, Marcellus is a really good guy. He's a genuinely sitting across from you these last couple months. I said, man, Marcellus is a great guy. I wonder if Marcellus has some inner turmoil. Rooting for a team is so hard to root for. You know, a couple games back, you got Montrez, blank, blank, white boy, talking about Luka. And then this past game, like you that. You got Marcus Morris intentionally going after your superstar player. I'm like, golly, this team is hard to root for. Marcellus, you taught me something. You said all players are not treated equally. No. So people are wondering, why is there an outcry about Marcus Morris? It's a basketball game. Mm. Maybe it's a game type of play. Nah, that's not how it works, because you got to esteem your superstars a little differently. Marcellus, when we play in football, they always say, stay off the
quarterback.
Stay off the quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not supposed to hit the quarterback.
One-way ticket go.
Because the quarterback, the most valuable player.
Except in New York. We'll get to that later.
When I was playing in college, we had our superstar defensive end, Brian Arakpo, 6'5" All-Pro Pro Bowler for the Tennessee Titans. He hits our all-time winningest quarterback in college football history, Colt McCoy. Didn't nobody say nothing to Arakpo because he was a superstar. Mm. Now let me hit the quarterback, I'm getting thrown out of practice. You see, you have to esteem and reverence and protect your superstars. So the other thing I took away was, Marcellus, I don't know how you, sir, such a good man, a leading father, an esteemed member of the community, can root for a team, sir, that you got your potential six-man candidates saying blank, blank, white boy, right? Making these racial slurs. And then you have Marcus Morris sitting here attempting to re-injure a player, a superstar that's already injured. I don't know, sir, how you can sleep at night, in all honesty, rooting for that kind of team. That's just my opinion.
Well, the early eulogy is not going to stop me from killing you. And I know you're trying to kill me, but I'm going to have to put you in your own coffin. It's amazing that you take a clip early, give you your props. You did that. You showed the clip. The world responded to it. HD TV, 4K.
4K, 4K.
Intent. Deaf, like, because your TV different than mine.
Intent deaf.
How did you read intention from that? I'm going to tell you why I root for the Clippers, and I'm going to show you why, if you are still a Mavs fan, I don't know if you've really forgotten.
Dallas.
You forgot where you came from all the way? No? Okay. I'm going to tell you why I root for the Clippers. Simple as this. My dad's from Texas. He moved to San Diego. He's a San Diego Clipper fan. Underdog mentality, as they're the L.A. Clippers. Second team in L.A., JV, as they call them, little brothers, whatever you want to say. That's who I was growing up. Nobody saw me coming. Nobody saw what I was going to be, underdog. I said, you know what, Daddy? I'm a root for what you root for. It's in my DNA, and guess what? That's my mindset. That's why I root for a team like this. But I don't understand how you root for the Dallas Mavericks when I got video of some dirty plays as well. Let's see some video from Luka Doncic and Tim Hardaway Jr. Oh, look at this right here. Watch this play right here. And you want to tell me, how can I root for a team? What is that where your feet normally, what square footage of the basketball court does it land where you kick a man in his manhood?
That's that incidental kick.
What about that one? We got more.
That incidental kick is the best he has, ladies and gentlemen.
How about Hardaway? I know that Fox has the WWE, but we really going to have Hardaway go out there with that? You want to defend your team?
That foul was called, correct, sir?
I don't care if you call it a foul.
Correct, sir?
I'm talking about what's your intent. Since you got an intent deaf television, you should be able to tell me that. You want to retort?
My only simple retort, Marcellus, is exactly what I told you, which is what you told me first. I'm simply using your words against you, sir, which I know you hate when I do. You said that you cannot treat all players equally. You need to know better than anybody, because we got to sit here and talk about it. If nothing else, you got to protect your stars. But also, you got to take the nonsense out the game. Again, I can't judge intent. Mm. I can only present information, America. Yeah. I can't judge intent. I can only say that it would have taken 1 in 22 million chance for Marcus Morris, one of the most coordinated people on the planet, Dude, you know where you're about to be when you go up for a dunk. You know you got to duck your head so you don't hit the rim. We've seen Marcus Morris toe the sideline to make sure the ball don't go out of bounds. Mm. Athletes, the most court, like you said, only 5,000 players in the history of the world have played in the NBA. Marcus Morris is amongst those 5,000. Mm. Elite body coordination, elite hand-eye coordination, elite body control and body stability. Mm. But somehow, there's one player who has a bad ankle, his left ankle. If you watch the clip, Marcus Morris, he jogs up right foot, left foot, right foot, right foot to make sure that that left foot can hit Luka's ankle. I'm not saying it was intentional, sir. I'm just presenting the information to the jury and the judge and let them cast a verdict.
You're using my words against me, and now you're going to use my persona, my brand, who I am, my identity, my character against me. You know I always got to keep it 100. Hell yeah, he did that on purpose. Look, if this was that dude's dues, if this was football right now, I could show you his foot cadence, his footwork that aligns with someone who's in mid-step with intent. Now, it's hard to measure in an intense environment. Intent is really difficult when you get into, you know, playoff games and stuff like that, when it's really live bullets. Like, my intent is always to commit bodily harm in football. And if I know you got a bad elbow, I kind of want to make sure I tackle you through the elbow, correct? And in this situation, he did step on his foot on purpose. If he wants to tweet at me, hey, I'm going to respond and say, first, I'm a fan. But second of all, I am a fan. So take it easy. But second of all, you did it on purpose. I understand the gamesmanship.
Now, look, thank you, we can have a real conversation, ladies and gentlemen, because we got to be real. In sports, if you do notice somebody might have a bruised quad on the football field, you might, when he's on the ground, hit him with an extra little knee, something. If you know that somebody has a bruised rib, if you're a defensive lineman, you might hit him with a little extra elbow. Mm-hmm. I get that. The other thing is, Marcus Morris, do it at least within, like, the confinements of, like, the game.
Yeah.
Like, within play.
Yeah, play
like,
it off a little
better.
Like, if
Luka's going up for a rebound, at least play it off a little better, like, for your own sake. Uh-huh. Because I'm watching TV kick back at the house, and I'm like, come on, bro. You took Luka's shoe off. Like, and then here's the worst thing. This is what I don't know if y'all caught. I knew Marcus Morris was guilty when he tried to help Luka up.
You up. Doing
y'all,
too much.
Y'all been beefing all game.
Doing too
you gonna try to help Luka up and then go try to pick up his shoe for him?
Yeah.
If you did it on accident, you would have been like, man, my bad, bro. Get your own shoe.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you a story, Marcellus. University of Texas, 2008. I was there. Mm. It was a former teammate of mine stole a dude's wallet on my team. I got him for his wallet. The dude looking for his wallet throughout the locker room. Can anybody help me find my wallet? Can y'all help me find my wallet? The dude who stole his wallet was like, you lost your wallet, my dog? I'm going to help you look for it. So you got the thief searching through the locker room for a wallet that he stole. That's what Marcus Morris was doing yesterday. He took Luka's shoe off on purpose, and then, let me help you with your shoe, Luka. Let me catch you in case you fall. Like, we weren't going to be able to read through them lines. Come on, bro.
Ooh, Lil Wayne and Kendrick got a song about
what
that.
Song?
Let y'all go back and find that. It's a little raunchy. It goes there. I love it. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll address Doc Rivers' comments last night on police brutality and the developing story of NBA players talking about a boycott tomorrow. You don't want to miss that. But first, my Clippers and the Lakers are coming off blowout wins. I'll tell you why my squads was way more impressive. Nuts! Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Let's head to the NBA, where the Lakers and Clippers both showed in their last games while they're big favorites to meet in the Western Conference Finals. The Clippers blew out the Mavericks last night behind Paul George's 35 points, while the Lakers blew out the Blazers on Monday behind King James's 30 points, joined by Fox NBA analyst Slick Rick. But Marcellus, I'm going to you first. I already know the answer. But which blowout was more impressive, the Clippers or them Lakers?
I have to go with the Clippers.
Womp.
Captain Obvious over here. let me say why, though. It's just because of the layers. It's because of the menu of ingredients you can add to what the Clippers can deliver night in, night out, when fully activated, when healthy, and when fully motivated. That's just the difference in these two teams. With the Lakers, you're two duo. You got your guys, LeBron, you got your guys, Anthony Davis. After that, it becomes a little bit of guesswork in terms of who's going to be the third guy to step up. But when you look at the Clippers, you go 3, 4, maybe even 5 deep before you start saying, okay, who's the next guy? And I'm talking about when these teams are at their peak powers. I'm not talking about when they're sputtering along like the Lakers were in game one or the Clippers were for a couple games in this series. I'm talking about when they see each other coming as it looks like that's going to be inevitable. What's going to happen when they both say line up, Voltron versus Voltron? There's just going to be more pieces on the Clippers roster than there are on the Lakers.
I have to utterly and vehemently disagree with you, sir, but that was obvious. The more impressive win depends on who you beat. That's what you told me yesterday. I listened to you when you talk, which might actually be a problem. But the more impressive victory is who you beat. The Clippers beat the Mavs again without Porzingis. Porzingis, only player, I believe, in NBA history, 125 three-pointers and 100 blocks in one single season. That is a big-time loss. Now, I understand the Mavs overachieved, and they beat the Clippers in game 4, if I'm not mistaken, without Porzingis. But Luka was a little bit healthier. That ankle, again, is starting to wear on him. But the other reason I think that the Lakers' victory is a little more impressive, the Lakers are winning within the legal limits. You see, the Lakers gave the Blazers body blow game 1 that they took, but they delivered a little one. Then game 2, game 3, body shots. Nurkic is barely making it down the court. Dame Lillard, now he has a soft tissue type of injury, a knee sprain, more than likely an MCL type injury going on. Within legal limits, the Blazers, they went in off cheap shots. So if I'm talking about the more impressive victory, it's the team who rested LeBron James in the fourth quarter after he had already given you 30 in the first 3. It's the team whose second superstar, AD, didn't play, only played for 18 minutes and still gave you buckets. It is clear, unequivocally clear, that the Lakers had a more impressive victory over a more impressive team.
We need to, first of all, we need to revisit the probability class that Acho either did or did not take when it comes to Marcus Morris,
state school,
and the reality of whether that was accidental or whether
we can do the math together. I got a chalkboard, Slick.
Damn, old school.
We will get back to that. But we also, there's something missing from your formula when it comes to which was the more impressive victory. And I'm going to say that it was the Clippers' victory, because it's not just who you played, it's when you played them. As you correctly noted, this was the third win in a row by the Lakers. I'm not even sure this was the most impressive blowout among the 4 games for the Lakers. That would have been game 2, where they came out and they stepped on them. Game 3, it's a matter of execution at the end, and they beat them in that game as well. Conversely, the Clippers are playing against a Dallas Mavericks team that was coming off of a huge emotional high and played at the beginning of this latest game, as if they were still on that high, making their first 3 shots, taking a 7-point lead with 3.5 minutes into the game. The Clippers had to snuff all of that out, and they did. So while the Lakers certainly continuing their drum roll and not allowing another misstep was impressive, the fact of the matter is the Clippers had a much bigger monster to slay in this latest game, and they did.
Yeah, Acho's really been off today, but I'm going to let him live because I need him tomorrow. But his probability in the first block was off, talking about
it wasn't. It wasn't.
1 in 22 million versus I'm 1 of 450 out of 7 billion walking this planet. I take the odds that Acho is offering. Also, in this one, he says that the Lakers were better victory because of who they played. But they played... they didn't play a 7th seed. They played an 8th seed. They didn't play a team that won more games over the season than they lost. They played a team that lost more games than they won. They didn't play a team that, in normal situations, would even been in the playoffs. They played this, like, raffle ticket play-in team.
Raffle ticket.
And look, I know Dame was hot. I know Portland was hot. I know I was caught up in the sauce, and I love that. That's the thing about me. I answer questions, and I stay in the moment, and I will change on a dime. But that said, when we saw the Dallas Mavericks with no Porzingis, I would use that as ammunition for you, Acho, except we lost to them without Porzingis before, so that kind of undermines that argument. So when you see the Dallas Mavericks as they were before we dismantled them, before we took not one, but two punches from them to the dome and then responded properly. You have to look at the Clippers saying, man, look at how they had support. Not only PG getting out of his slump, and let's not forget he still had a great game one. People are really exaggerating how bad he's been. Two of these games he's been great. Let's go to Kawhi with his 32. Montrez finally bringing the energy, 19 and 11, and getting in shape. So when we need him for that energy, we're going to have that. Marcus Morris, Shamet, Reggie Jackson, Lou Will only scored 8, and we still smoked them boys. I just named off, what, 6 guys? You can't do that for the Lakers night in, night out. That's why it's more important.
It's not.
More impressive, too.
It's not. Look, Slick, I got to address something you said, because you said the Mavs were hot. They were coming off that big victory. It's easier to beat a team when they sitting there full. See, the Mavs ate the cheese, Slick. The Mavs was feeling themselves. You know the straight up Marcellus. What do your coach tell you when you come off a big victory? You got to enjoy it, but you got to put it behind you. The Mavs was playing like they was from, like, proper Dallas, like Highland Park, like where I was from. You know, adjacent to that. Man, them Clippers, them boys was playing like they was hungry. H-O-U-N. Like, it was a difference, Slick.
I guarantee you when your coach told you that, when you heard that, you were the favorite. Yes, it is difficult when you have a big win, then to come back against an inferior opponent and maintain that same intensity. But that wasn't the case here. The Dallas Mavericks weren't supposed to have a chance in this series, and lo and behold, they have this big shot, and suddenly it's 2-2, and they're thinking, you know what? We could win this thing. And the Clippers had to come back and say, no, you're not going to win this thing, and we're going to get this done in 6. Meanwhile, the Lakers made that statement in game 2. They answered then. So by the time you get to game 4, and Marcellus, you said that Lillard was hot, and he was, but he wasn't hot in this game. They didn't have to snuff that out.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Doncic is feeling every kind of way, and they had to slow that down. So look, I love the fact that we are going to see the Lakers. We are seeing the Lakers and the Clippers find their best selves in presenting that. But if I'm looking just through the prism of these two games, let's face it. All the questions were, where's Paul George? Where's Playoff P? The Clippers, could they lose this series? We weren't thinking that going into game 4 between the Lakers and the Blazers.
Yeah, on the road to managing how to maneuver towards a championship, I think we made a miscalculation. I'll be real. The Clippers didn't know how much gas to use in the early onset, and they got exposed for it. 2 games lost because they didn't know how to hit the gas pedal. And look at the Lakers. It took them 1 game to realize, oh, we got to hit it a little more than that to get into a cruise control situation. That's okay, because the Clippers, outside of Kawhi, we really don't have that championship experience on the roster. We have it in our coaching. So it's good to see that these guys can respond. Clippers took 2 on the face. Y'all took 1, but we did respond.
It's good to see the Lakers and the Clippers both playing at a high level, because those are the 2 teams I'm trying to see in the Western Conference Finals anyway. Coming up, Joe Judge thinks it's still the 1970s, and he wants his team to put some hands on the quarterback, Daniel Jones. Giants fans, I'm about to go off next. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's talk Joe Judge, who is making a questionable first impression as the Giants' new head coach. He's already punishing players and assistant coaches by making them run laps for mistakes. Now he's ready to take off the red non-contact jersey on his quarterback, Daniel Jones, and allow him to get hit. Take a listen to Judge's explanation.
I don't think we're going to throw him in any, you know, Royal Rumbles or anything like that. But, you know, at some point we'll pop his pads a little bit in a controlled environment. You know, maybe that's with, you know, a young guy who understands, just kind of, you know, hitting him a little bit. But I'm not in a hurry to go ahead and just beat the hell out of him, Tom. But, you know, at some point we'll prepare his body for what he may take in the first game.
Joined now by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Aaron Tibodacho. You're up first. I know where this is going. Joe Judge being smarter.
He went 33-47. Romeo Crennel, 6-10 his first year, 28-55. Josh McDaniels, 11-17 as a head coach. Matt Patricia, 9-22, 6-10 in year 1. I'm not making this up. I've read this. I've seen this story. I bought this movie ticket, and I'm not going back. The last thing I'm going to say, Giants fans, don't listen to my words. Listen to Eric Mangini, former Belichick understudy. He said himself in 2019, he said, I think one of my biggest mistakes was trying to emulate people I looked up to too much instead of incorporating things I believed in from them. Joe Judge is trying to emulate this 1970s smash mouth, I'm going to wear finger tape around every one of my joints, put eye black on, and have a kicker face bar, and we're going to smack him in the mouth. Joe Judge, Daniel Jones, your quarterback is more important than you are. You don't need to pop his pads. A quarterback doesn't need to be physically tough. Peyton Manning, he would duck from a sack. Eli, two-time Super Bowl MVP, he would throw that thing away before you even breathed on him. Tom Brady ain't running nobody over. Your quarterback needs to be mentally tough. Here ends the lesson.
Damn. You're lucky it's a pandemic because you are not allowed in New York. Yeah, I know you ain't going to travel anyway, but God, Lord. I think it's reckless as well. Not to echo what he said.
You can echo it, please.
But I am going to travel a lot of the same distance as you. Look, first of all, anything that we do, coach, in activity has to apply to my craft, or I'm already looking at you side-eye, coach. Like, everything we do out there has to be in service to a greater good that's going to help me play this game. And I don't see putting your quarterback in a harmful, unnecessary, risky situation is going to help you guys go out there and win ball games. This is so reckless. I used to see coaches all the time put us through tackling drill after tackling drill. And I used to always say, because you know me, I thought I had a big brain and a big mouth, and I had some game, so I had some leverage. You ain't going to cut me. Hey, coach, I have never, ever tackled someone in the game like you keep telling me to tackle them here. When Jerome Bettis run by me, it's fight or flight. When Jerome Bettis run by me, I'm like, it's either him or me. And all you got to do is teach me, and it can be mental reps, what the proper way to do that is, and then let me go out there and just get it done. But this whole quarterback needs to now feel the pain that I did as a former D lineman. Just scan the entire offense, and you can scan the entire defense. Every single position raises their hand when it's like game time. Yeah, I know I got some hell to pay. Except receivers. Oops, I'm sorry. Did y'all watch Hard Knocks? Even receivers got to go out there and block. Even receivers got to go out there and put their hand in the fire. But quarterbacks, if everyone else does their job on the offense, especially the offensive line, hey, I can actually come back in this locker room without any soil on my uniform. So, coach, what are you doing? You're putting me in unnecessary risk, bruh.
I think it's funny that you said Jerome Bettis was running by you.
He got me one time in the arm, this far back.
Wait, hold on, Marcelli. You didn't say as we were meeting up.
Oh, no.
I had to. You said as he was running by me. That's kind of funny. I got you. Listen, I want to agree with you guys, and part of me agrees with you. But as ridiculous as this may seem, I'm going to say while I don't agree with what it is that he's saying, I can understand that this man, as a coach, has a vision. And whatever, oh, man.
A vision?
Whatever his, oh, man.
Oh, we got you. Keep going.
We got you in our vision. Oh, now you done logged off. This dude done logged off on live TV.
Good, because I got more.
You got more? Well, you know LeVar always agrees with Joe Judge. You know what I'm saying? He always trying to get that interview. So what you got? Let me hear.
Look. Here's my thing, because so many Twitter trolls came at me, Marcellus, after my first statement. Acho,
eggs
you only played in the four years in the NFL. Maybe you should have been running. No. If you're in the NFL, you're already tough.
You wrong.
You feel me?
Yes.
Like, if you're in the NFL, you are already tough. You don't need to work on your toughness. You went through high school. Okay. You went through college, which is also tougher than the NFL, because college, you had real two-a-days before they honed back on that. Mm. Well, you putting them wet pads on still twice a day. Good to see you again, LeVar, but I'm going right now.
Maybe that was the football gods not wanting me to finish my statement.
Mess up but your interviews.
I'm still going to continue with my thought process.
Take the floor. Sacho just going to hate on New
take
York.
The floor. Got
it. When you think about what a person who has a vision for a business or, you know, just an idea of what they want to accomplish in their life, a lot of times it's reported in these stories, success stories, that what? In the beginning, they were considered to be crazy. It was outlandish. Mm. It didn't make any sense.
Interesting.
And you know what? People were probably right. So for me, am I cutting out again?
No, we got
it. All right, here we go. So I really feel as though he is going, the way he's approaching this, whether right or wrong, is going to be an end result that justifies him. It will not be an in the moment.
That's real.
And I think that's the biggest thing that we got to take into consideration right now is, as crazy as it may sound, and I've never seen a quarterback
be made fair game. First of all, I'd be licking my chops because I'd be so like, just cause I just want to go get it. Right.
Been a while.
But here we go. If this works and he changes the culture of what could be perceived to not be such a New York mentality, a New York state of mind. You think of all of the rappers and the great people that have come out of New York City. It's all based upon those cliches that Judge used. I mean, think about where Jay-Z came from. It wasn't a silver spoon. Think about Nas and all those guys, you know, and DMX. It was not from a silver spoon.
But LeVar, let me ask you this, though. LeVar, you know firsthand. A culture changes from within. Joe Judge is not in 1 month. By making players run laps, by letting Daniel Jones get hit, he's not all of a sudden going to make his entire 53, really 63, but right now 80-man roster tougher. In all honesty, we're not sure if it worked for Bill Belichick or if Tom Brady is really the reason why all of that worked, if we're keeping it 100. So Bill Belichick's road to success, we still don't know if it was because of his super tough mantra and Belichick way, or if it was because of Tom Brady who was helping lead that. So while I'm with you, I'm just this isn't the 70s, LeVar. You feel me? Like, you don't wear your neck rolls anymore with your huge shoulder pads. Yeah. And, like, this is an NFL where the game has changed. It's an offensive league. Joe Judge has to fit that mantra.
You know what's interesting about that, your point, is that trends do repeat themselves.
They do, eventually.
They do. You will see somebody wear – I've seen stonewashed jeans and as of late. I never thought I'd see stonewashed jeans. I even have seen people with the leather and suede patches on the front of their pads. On God. I never thought that trend would ever come back. But it did. And I think that when you're looking at what Joe Judge is trying to do, maybe exactly what he's saying is that all of these trends and all of these cultural shifts that have turned, you know, what arguably is a microcosm of how soft our culture in America has become and has gotten, he's basically saying, let's go back to the core values of what made this game the game that it is now. And although you can't head slap and clothesline guys and different things like that, while it may seem crazy and in the moment, it sounds as though it is reckless, ridiculous, and crazy. But if he changes the mentality of these guys and they believe in what it is that he's bringing their way, and it works, then on the other side of it, it's an entirely different conversation.
What's more likely, that or them going 5-11?
Well, we're not discussing whether it's more likely. We're discussing if it's his vision and it works, then we have no choice but to sit there and be like, man, whatever it is Bill Belichick did when he turned New England into what they turned into, people weren't checking for what he was saying and what he was doing, and people weren't judging him on if it was too old school versus fitting the culture of what people are used to. I've experienced this firsthand. I remember when Bruce came to Washington and Coach Schottenheimer came in on Bruce's second year in training camp. We were doing run drills. We were doing the stuff being lined up, two guys,
Oklahoma
two defense
drills.
Linemen
Oklahoma
in front. Line.
Yeah, Oklahoma okay. drill. I did them with Marty. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm here.
And Marty had Bruce do the drill. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, Bruce made the tackle, picked the dude up, threw him out of the way, hit the dude, rolled out, fell out, didn't practice another practice for the rest of the training camp. But Bruce showed us something that we hadn't seen from Bruce since he had got to Washington, which was, I knew Bruce could do the rubber band. You know, I nicknamed him the black rubber band. I know he could do his arms all kinds of different ways and contort his body and get around. I never saw Bruce pick a dude up and just throw him out of the way. Now, we went 0-5, to your point. To your point, Emmanuel. We went 0-5 the first part of the year. And then we made NFL history, and we went 5 games straight and missed the playoffs by 1 game.
So you did that and still missed the playoffs. That's what I heard.
Yeah, the NFC East was a little better back then.
LeVar, all I know is it didn't end well for Marty out there, regardless of how it started. Well, and it sounded like it didn't even start well out there either. Speaking from a football player's perspective, I just got to get this one in. I hated this when we had a new coach, and no matter what he was thinking and trying to make us do, we had to do it because he was in the way of us and our opportunity and the way that we wanted to achieve our goals. Some coaches player friendly, some coaches disciplinary, but I just hate it. I used to generalize it and call it like the JUCO player that didn't get all the football game out of him, even though I know Joe Judge went to Mississippi State. But that guy who still got so much left but didn't get to show it, and then he comes and he's your high school coach or your Pop Warner coach.
But what if it works?
And he letting you have all of the hell that he didn't put out there for himself. I hate that.
But what if it works?
Yeah, yeah, well.
What ifs? A lot of what ifs there.
And
well, y'all gave a whole bunch of what ifs.
Well, LeVar, excuse me, Black Rubber Bands, maybe they come back in style. Let's see. Coming up, Julian Edelman just put an end to the quarterback controversy in New England. We'll finally put this to rest. Next, Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's keep it rolling by heading to New England, where three quarterbacks, including Cam Newton, are vying for the starting job. Bill Belichick, obviously, he hasn't named a starter, but he has given Cam praise, calling him, quote, very skilled athlete. Is that praise? Well, one of Cam's main targets, Julian Edelman, gave a very interesting clue on who the starter will be. Edelman posted an image of Cam in a Superman costume, adding himself in a Batman costume, adding, quote, the night is darkest just before the dawn. I promise you, the dawn is coming. Joined once again by LeVar Arrington. And you can finally admit you were wrong here. Does Julian Edelman's post mean that Cam won the quarterback race?
No, it doesn't, because if Julian Edelman was the authority on who's going to be playing quarterback, Tom Brady would be the quarterback of the New England Patriots. If you recall, he was the head of the Bring Tom Brady Back fan club. So, and there were a lot of social media posts on that. Julian Edelman seems to be a tad bit of an instigator more than anything else, and I'll tell you why. For one, to put out there in social media before a team and a coach does it, who's going to be the starter is problematic. That's first and foremost. But then secondly, you got to read a little deeper into this post if you understand comic books. I'm a comic book person from old school.
Oh, good. I'm not.
Batman and Superman are arch rivals. They're jealous of one another. At times, they've come together, but the relationship is very rocky. They both want the credit, right? Now, here's what's interesting. Here's what's interesting, right? Julian Edelman doesn't put himself in a Superman outfit. He puts himself in the Batman outfit. The Batman signal is what's in the air, which is the New England Patriots sign. Okay, now, if you know comic history, you know that Batman pretty much was ready to kill Superman, but didn't, because they created a bond, because both of them have the same, their mother has the same first name, Martha, right? Weird stuff. But if you look at the subliminal message connected to this comic book riff that Julian Edelman puts out, he's basically saying, I'm the main guy. This is not a Batman and Robin situation. I'm not going to put myself in a Robin suit. I'm Batman, meaning that this is my team. And Superman, if you come along, I could kill you at any point in time. But just be clear, it's my sign in the air that's calling for Batman. It's my suit. And this is problematic, just like Edelman has been since the offseason going into now.
So what I took away from that is...
Doesn't say he's going to be the starter.
Is Edelman going to kill Cam or not? That's all I took away from that. That's not going to happen,
well,
right?
Well, he killed Tom Brady last year.
Seriously.
Keep the party going.
Big dog, you broke all of that comic book down just to deflect from the fact that you've been wrong on this issue from day one. And I told you from day one when... Cam Newton landed at Logan International Airport in Boston. He was the starter, man. Come on, bro. Let's just take this back to what we know best. And it ain't football, because I know you, LeVar Arrington. It's just living that life. And we used to live that life. And there was a time or two when you would see somebody and you heard, and it didn't matter what you heard, because what you saw was just enough. And some people would call that a 10. And then every now and then you would walk around and you would think that you knew what a 10 was because it was the ceiling. And then you would see someone that would make you say, is there a such thing as an 11? Because right now, and I raised my hand. I'm married to one. Boom! Yeah. You said it, not me.
I'm married
to one.
Okay,
I ain't going to ever double tap y'all pictures
either.
But here's the thing. An 11 to make you say, damn, I thought a 10 was something special. Mm-hmm. And that's what Cam Newton is. Julian Edelman, he is so in love with Cam. Out here in L.A. throwing balls with him. Now just leaking the information to let everybody know, hey, this ain't a controversy. This is not a competition, because this is an 11. He's next level in terms of athleticism and skill set. AB went from three teams in 4 days, damn near, because he's an 11 in terms of football potential and ability. Cam Newton finds himself in that same position since he's healthy. No wonder Edelman losing his mind, because he in love with this 11.
LeVar, it's not too late, my friend, to switch sides.
Nope. Come on.
I was standing with you, LeVar, and Marcella said, Red Rover,
I know you
and
were.
Acho, come over. And I ran from that side of ignorance, which is a side you on, to some logic.
I get it.
To some logic.
Yeah.
So come on over, LeVar. You got to remember, who's going to know better than us who's about to be that starter? Edelman.
Bill Belichick.
No. Along with Bill Belichick. Edelman, but
definitely
yes, good.
Good.
If right. Cam was going to be a backup, he would have put Cam in a penguin costume. He would have made Cam, you know, maybe Poison Ivy. But you're really not going to tell me that you're going to put Cam in a Superman fit because Superman is here to do what? To save the day. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No. It's Super Cam. And Edelman has now realized, LeVar, what Marcellus realized first. Kudos to you, big bro.
It's your
what
boy.
I have realized second. But third place, LeVar, still gets a medal. It might be bronze, but you can still put it around.
It looks like gold if you squint.
If you squint, LeVar, if you close your left eye and squint with your right, it'll still look like a medallion.
Hey, hook LeVar up with his own comic
Y'all
book.
Tripping.
Hook LeVar
all I know is he's setting Bill Belichick up. If Cam doesn't start, all Edelman is doing is I tried to get Tom Brady back.
Look at that, LeVar. That's for you. They hooked you up for LeVar Arrington. They knew you loved comic books, and they knew you would struggle with eating your crow. So Edelman sent
here,
that
man.
To your boy on
I'll
the
I'll eat
DM
it if it's served up right. If the crow is served up right, I'll eat it. But until then, I think it's all a setup.
Kudos to you, LeVar, for exegeting a tweet. I've never heard someone break down a comic book like that. Coming up, Doc Rivers has some thoughts on police brutality last night. And a few NBA players are talking about boycotting games, which could put a halt to the season. We'll unpack it all. That's next.
Y'all done turned me against Cam.
Good.
You watch and speak for yourself. I'm Marcel Swally. Manuel Acho.
My dog.
Top of the hour, man. Let's return to the NBA. And Doc Rivers, who should have been happy after his team had a blowout win against the Mavericks. But after the game, Doc was asked how he felt about the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Wisconsin. Here's Doc's emotional response. Take a listen.
What stands out to me is just watching the Republican convention and this viewing this fear, right? Like, all you hear is Donald Trump and all of them talking about fear. We're the ones getting killed. We're the ones getting shot. We're the ones that we're denied to live in certain communities. We've been hung, we've been shot. And all you do is keep hearing about fear. It's amazing. Why we keep loving this country, and this country does not love us back. And it's really so sad. Like, I should just be a coach. And it's so often reminded of my color. My dad was a cop. I believe in good cops. We're not trying to defund the police and take all their money away. We're trying to get them to protect us.
Acho, what's your reaction to what Doc said?
Watched it live last night. Mm-hmm. Tough to hear. And I think of this, Marcellus, because I've heard so many takes. So let me try to offer something that everyone can digest. I'll lead with a Ben Franklin quote. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are affected. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are affected. We think about so much going on right now. Black Lives Matter, logos on the court, changing the jersey. And we've heard the outcry. Is that the reason for viewership declining? But then I sat back, Marcellus, and I said, wait a second. 2009, the NFL started in October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Fields littered in pink, pink gloves, pink wristbands, pink towels, pink logos, pink embroidery across the jerseys. And no one had a problem with that, Marcellus. And the reason is because everybody has at one point in time or another been affected by cancer. Maybe not personally, maybe not a mother, maybe not a father, but a relative, maybe a friend, maybe a coach. Everybody can empathize with cancer because everybody has been affected by it. But not everybody has been affected by police brutality. Not everybody has been affected by racial discrimination. So it can begin to fall on deaf ears. So when I hear Doc Rivers, what I simply submit is those that are not affected, at least try to understand, wait, what is truly going on? Don't be disdained by it. Don't be turned off by it. Because remember, when it happened in football with breast cancer, which wasn't necessarily a social issue, but was a health issue, which you understood, you weren't turned off by that matter. I'm also thinking of this when I hear about Doc Rivers' comments. Racism, it knows no political affiliation.
Yeah.
Racism, it has no affiliation except for hate. That's the only racism is affiliated with. So I was encouraged by Doc Rivers' comments, although I pay no mind to the affiliation of it all. But I really just beg and plea that people can empathize. Remember Marcellus, DeSean Jackson, about a month ago, he tweeted a quote that was attributed to Hitler. And so many of my Jewish colleagues were outraged because people that look like you and people that look like me, black people, were seemingly silent. And I'll be honest, I looked around and I was like, man, it is pretty quiet from my brothers on Twitter. And I said, why is that, Marcellus? I had to ask myself. I said, why is that? And I realized it's because black people can't relate to anti-Semitism. So since black people can't necessarily relate, generally speaking, to anti-Semitism, they're a little more hesitant to speak because they can't relate. So what did I do right before the show, Marcellus? I called my friend Jeff Schwartz, Jewish former NFL offensive lineman. I said, Schwartz, I said, to a degree, I understand why there's such an uproar from the Jewish community, but you tell me why. Why were you so hurt by DeSean Jackson's anti-Semitic comments? We talked for 10 minutes. And then I came on a show with you and I said, look, my brother, let's talk about it. But I first had the time and the education and the willingness to listen to it so we could have an educated dialogue. So when I hear Doc Rivers' comments, Marcellus, there might be a word I disagree with. There might be a sentence I disagree with. But I was willing to listen and can only encourage everybody else, please listen to what is going on, what's being said, not just by Doc Rivers, but by other athletes and by other educated people, and then have that empathy to speak. Because again, in closing of this first thought, justice won't be served until those that are unaffected are as outraged as those that are.
Mm. You said a lot, man. You said a lot. It caught me off guard to watch my team, you know, I'm basking in glory and victory, the Clipper fan in me, and to see Doc Rivers. When he removed the mask, I was like, oh, something's about to go down. It's about to get real. And he was real. I am out of the lane and out of the mindset of dismissing anyone's experience, because your experience is your expertise. I use my experience to help guide me, but I also map it on the reality. And more importantly, I always try to show total perspective and make sure I encompass all of the facets of my life. So let me start a little lighthearted, as I like to do, and then I bring the pain. The levity of this is, I remember Drake and Amigos said, walk it like I talk it, walk it like I talk it. And I think they got it wrong, because I think you really need to talk it like you walk it. Talk it like you walk it. Maybe not as good a song, but certainly I think more credible and it has a greater impact. America loves you, Doc Rivers. I don't know what you think love is, because it's not perfection. It's not without its issues and ills. I'm in a loving relationship with my wife and a loving relationship with my kids. And it's not perfect. Not even every day do I look at it as a perfect situation, but I'm committed to it. And I know there are some highs and there's some lows, and the highs certainly outweigh the lows. So when I see this in response to what we're talking about, another situation of police brutality, first thing that comes to my mind is the talk that I think a lot of black people wanted to trademark and saying that the talk is only within the black borders. My talk was universal, and I think it is a talk that everyone should have. My dad told me a long time ago, he said, man, look, if you ever get pulled over by the police, the courtroom is not on the concrete. This is not a moment to prove who's right and who's wrong. This is not a moment that you should do anything but compliance, because whether you are right or whether you are wrong, you're in a situation where you will be the subject of pain unless you comply. Now, I know a lot of people take that and say, they were wrong too. I'm not talking about that. If they were truly in the wrong, it's better to you be sitting in the courtroom to sue them, to bring awareness to this situation, whatever it may be, versus your family sitting in that same courtroom with a wrongful death suit and you on their T-shirt. I would take it to this place that you said that Doc had a sentence offered to. I don't even want to break down necessarily the negatives or the ills of what Doc said, but I want people to understand that through my experience, which is my expertise, not every white person has privilege. I know a lot of struggling white people, to the tune of I'm growing up in Compton, California, and my family in our house, we had two white people, Uncle John and Aunt Gloria, that we had to take care of that were former veterans, white people, that I called my family members. This didn't hit me till like 2 months ago that, wow, I have a little different look on race in this world than it seems like a lot of people. And it's because I was introduced to it in a completely different dynamic. Not every white person has privilege. Though Uncle John, Aunt Gloria didn't have privilege. And not every black person has experienced racism or police brutality. You know why? Because I haven't. Now, people can say, oh, you're different, you're unique, you're a pro athlete. I'm talking about growing up age 0 to 18, Compton, California. So this takes me to something I want to talk about. And it's about the media, us, the media manipulation of our minds. I grew up 1974 to the 80s, Reaganomics, crack cocaine, gangbanging, Compton, South Central. And I remember everyone saying, we need more positive imagery of black people. We need more of us to be shown than just this one slice, one layer. And let's go through this kind of lightheartedly. Sanford and Son and Good Times were the shows that I watched growing up at first. Sanford and Son, father and son relationship, but they in the junkyard of Watts. Good Times is a family, nuclear family in the projects in Chicago. And people are like, okay, that's good, it's a start, but we need more. And you need to show us in a better light. Like, we got some influence, we're growing. Then Different Strokes hit. Boom, now it's my favorite show because of the impact. Had the circular stairwell, everything.
And the theme song went hard.
Oh, went hard. But here's the thing about it. This is what it did to me. It let me know, wow, just by displacing you, putting you in a different locale, changes your entire world. As we know, two black kids get adopted by a wealthy white family. But then I heard the pushback. Oh, why they gotta only live it good if it's because of white people? And then the show that came that changed the world, black America for sure, The Cosby Show. Upper middle class finally showing that, hey, we earned this and we're taking care of ours and we're kind of normal, but we're just upper middle class. And then that empowered so many other people in this world to look at it from that perspective, say, yes, 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 yes. And then the pushback came from that. Hey, we got some real wealth out there, not just upper middle class, not rich, wealthy. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air came. Real wealth earned, butlers, drivers, everything. And then you grab the guy from the neighborhood, put him in that position. Why did I go through this? Because the cycle repeated. It went back to the beginning. Same time Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is coming out, guess what the movies are doing? Let's go back to show more despair, Boys in the Hood. Oh, here we go again, showing only the pain, but it's a family perspective. The media and us, we, Doc Rivers, we have to be empowered and employed to show more layers of how we're living, how great it is. Let's sell more of the prosperity, more of the inspiration, not just the despair, because people back that we left and people that are in this situation dealing with this on the daily, they're sitting there needing that hope, bro.
So the first thing I agree with you wholeheartedly is that devastation sells far greater than good. And so that is you hit that nail on the head. Now, a couple things I do have to address, though. When Doc Rivers said that, you know, they don't love us, I heard that and I digested that. And then I don't know if I can agree with you, Marcellus, in saying, Doc, America does love you. See, America loves what Doc Rivers can do for them. Doc Rivers can coach the Clippers. Doc Rivers can play in the NBA. Doc Rivers can sell tickets and win games and we're all cheering. But I can say that, generally speaking, when Doc says America doesn't love us, I think he is generally speaking, speaking of the historical context of us being black-skinned people. America doesn't love us. And then you say that And I agree with you that not all white people are privileged. But remember, privilege is that verb. So what's the noun or the adjective that precedes it, right? Is it white privilege? Because white privilege isn't saying your life hasn't been hard. It's just saying your skin color hasn't contributed to the difficulty of your life. See, you can have famous people privilege. I went to Chipotle just the other day. Hey, Emmanuel, love the show. You and Marcellus do great. This burrito's on me. You can have CEO privilege. Right. See, by being the CEO, you can be granted immunity available to a particular person or group. See, that's all the privilege is. So I think when we're talking specifically about privilege, I'm not talking about privilege, because you're right. Privilege in and of itself is not descriptive enough. But that adjective or that noun that precedes privilege, I think that refers to what we're talking about. But when I heard Doc's comments, Marcellus, I did feel them. And again, I listen to and revere people like you because y'all lived life before me. So you have some experiences that you went through that I can't necessarily relate to. Mm. Doc Rivers has some experiences that he's gone through that you can't and I can't necessarily relate to. That's his expertise. And when you hear that man's heart, I just sit there and I listen. And I'm like, I get it. Now, you can't generally speak because some people will jump off that bandwagon. How can you say America doesn't love you? You're getting paid $3 million. But strip that NBA coaching title, who do you have left? When they strip the title from you, then who are you? So it's tough to digest, and this is a heavy topic, but I think Doc Rivers hit the nail on the head when he said, man, I just want to be a coach. Because oftentimes, I just want to be an analyst. But before I'm an analyst, I'm a human being. And before I'm an analyst, I'm a black man. And oftentimes, you can escape being an analyst as soon as we take this suit off and walk off the lot. But you can't escape your skin color, and you can't escape your humanity.
I'm going to push back just quickly and say that Uncle John, a white war veteran, would have said the same thing. America doesn't love him. A man who sacrificed his life and found himself in his last years, no family around, going to his funeral, nothing but us as his family, all black people. It's not just a black problem. Mm-hmm. You strip away whatever it is, your contributions to society, whatever it is, your way. I just think that it's universal, just as we started this by saying how racism is not just by political party, it's universal evil applied to others. We got to remember that there are no borders when it comes to those evils. Mm-hmm. Got breaking news coming up. We're bringing in Rick Bucher to get his reaction to what is happening right now in the NBA. Looks like the Bucks are boycotting Game 5 against the Magic in response to the latest police shooting in Wisconsin. More after this.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. We've got breaking news in the NBA. The Bucks are not taking the court for Game 5 of their matchup with the Orlando Magic. ESPN is reporting that the Bucks are officially boycotting Game 5. This appears to be in response to the latest police shooting in Wisconsin, something we've never seen before. Slick, Rick, tell us, what is your reaction to what's going on? Have you ever seen anything like this?
The only thing that I can compare it to is going all the way back to All-Star Game in the 60s. Bob Cousy and Oscar Robertson refused to come out at halftime until the league recognized a players' union and their ability to collectively bargain, and they held the league hostage in order to get that done, and it was successful, as we now have a players' union. But short of that, I've never seen anything like this, and it's an interesting dynamic, because I was texting with a player this morning, not on the Bucks, asking, does this boycott idea have any momentum? And he said no. And that was, again, not a Milwaukee Bucks player. They've shown that some of the Magic players are actually out there warming up. So this has clearly been a movement and a decision made by the Milwaukee Bucks as a group, and not collectively with the league. And so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, considering that they did this independently. Obviously, the incident with Jacob Blake happening in Wisconsin hits a lot closer to home and is more meaningful to the Milwaukee Bucks players. Also had a previous incident with a Bucks player and his treatment by local law enforcement. So this is an issue that this organization has had to address before, but it is an independent movement by the Milwaukee Bucks. This is not a collective. And now it's going to be interesting, guys, to see how the rest of the league and how these other teams respond now that Milwaukee has taken the stance.
Yeah, Slick, when I look at this, number one, I am proud that these NBA players would be willing to stand together, because remember, before they're basketball players, are human beings. But must I remind you, Jaylen Brown of the Celtics, he drove overnight 14 hours to march in Atlanta. Giannis Antetokounmpo, he also peacefully protested amidst the chaos that was going on in our community. However, my proposal and submission is, what next? If these players are going to boycott, I would hope that just put the ball down, let the quarter or the game or whatever you want to run out, pull some chairs on out the court, and then host a forum, a presser, talk about these issues to educate the community, to educate our nation based on your experience, because like Marcellus said, your experience is there for your expertise. But simply by boycotting, you may allow fans and viewers to just go somewhere else instead of focusing on exactly what it is you're trying to draw attention to. Kudos to the players for realizing there are things more important to life than basketball. Now let's just continue to move those steps and those action items forward by true conversations that can move the needle.
Yeah, just going back to how I planned out my life, how I was told by people I respected, people who were my elders, whether it were teachers, people I truly revered that had expertise in anything. You got to plan your next now. And it's interesting, as Acho says, how do you evolve the boycott? I understand what the intentions of the boycott are, but what comes from that boycott? The NBA employed and empowered these players to take this exact measure and this exact stance. With Black Lives Matter and all the social justice issues and messaging on their jerseys, that was going to start, and that was going to snowball into a situation and an unfortunate circumstance that just happened in Milwaukee, and now we're here. I'm not upset at that. I just want people to know that I don't see how this boycott of today is going to give the direct proper medicine to this societal ill. That's my cause. I don't need anything else except the medicine that helps me cure this. And let's be real about this. This situation has been going on long before the NBA, and it's unfortunate that this is a part of human society, human civilization. This is not just in the moment we are now discovering something new. As I talked about with Acho last block about all the different times through my lifetime growing up that I've been in the same place that we are right now. And the NBA and any professional league initially when I was growing up, and for these guys as well, the onus was to give them an opportunity to play the game they love and to provide generational wealth. It obviously is going to envelop more than that, but I would like to know, where is it going as it grows into more than that?
Yeah, that's an important point. And that's what I struggle with this boycott, considering that it appears that it wasn't a collective decision by the NBA teams or the NBA players. It was a decision made by the Milwaukee Bucks. And now everyone is drawn into having to follow suit and is impacted by it, and not having a voice in making that decision, I think is unfair, as crazy as that might sound, unfair to everyone else who now has to act accordingly. The other part for me is, if you really care about this cause, and we've seen this with Colin Kaepernick and any number of athletes, you have to be very exact in what you're doing and why you're doing it. And by boycotting, by not playing, what is your point? Who are you protesting and who are you trying to hurt? Are you protesting against the fans that would otherwise be watching you? Are you protesting against the NBA because they haven't taken a certain amount of action? And what is the end game? What are you willing to do? Not play another game? I just hope that there was more thought put into this than is indicated at this point, based on the reaction that I was getting from a player inside the bubble and where this was going to go. You have to come correct. We saw it with Colin Kaepernick. You can have a cause, But if you are not rock solid in how you present that, it is ultimately going to be picked apart, and it is going to undermine the cause that you are fighting for.
Exactly right. So we're going to take a quick break and give you our final thoughts on this historic NBA boycott that's taking place right now. That's next. Speak for yourself.
Welcome back. No Uncle Jimmy today. So Acho, final thoughts on the NBA boycott taking place right now.
The purpose of a boycott, to inflict economic loss onto a target. So I just asked the players, while you are in fact stronger together than you are alone, who and what is the target? It's not the broadcast agency. It's surely not yourself as the athlete. If you are going to band together and boycott, which I do believe is a wise thing to do, just make sure you move that attention towards positivity. Sit on the court, host a forum, educate the audience as to exactly why you are boycotting. Don't just boycott for boycott's sake. Don't just boycott to check a box. But if we're really going to change the world, if you're really going to try to change your world, make sure you think through it and you think before you act. You got to go to the end before you go to the beginning. So players, again, kudos to you for starting and banding together, but make sure we think through it.
Man, I am proud of the amplified voice of athletes, but in absence of going to PhD social commentary and social commentators on issues like this, we are leaving it to sports leagues and athletes.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.